Today's speaker has had a long career spanning all the areas of education and communication, including being an elementary school teacher, an education and communication provincial staff for the United Church, General Secretary Communication for the United Church of Canada, Executive Director, Calling Lakes Education and Retreat Center, plus 25 years as a conflict resolution facilitator. Today, Linda will talk on aging well and how location matters, as well as the goals and visions of the Saskatchewan Seniors Mechanism. Linda will explore how all older adults can age well and keep their independence of choice with some government investment and municipal attention and organization. All of this is dependent upon moving towards the many possibilities for the least expensive and most effective support. Linda has also agreed to stay after the service for some questions and answers, so that is very good. And I hope I didn't ask you this, Linda, but hopefully you allow us to tape this.
Oh, sure.
Thank you very much. Okay, so without any further ado, let me introduce you to Linda Anderson.
Thanks, Sandy. I'm going to share my screen now, if I can. Looks like we popped up the way we should. I presume everybody can hear me. If not, somebody will tell me that we're having trouble, and I'll either speak more quietly or more loudly or hopefully as clearly as I can. It's very good to be here this morning, and I'm thankful for a chance to talk to these groups, both from Regina and Saskatoon. That's a pretty much of a bonus. And I'm coming from the viewpoint of the Saskatchewan Seniors Mechanism, or as we call it all the time, SSM. It's the name Saskatchewan Seniors Mechanism is one that many people say, what on earth does that mean? What's the mechanism? And it's a over 30-year-old organization that was put together to have some representation from all of our seniors organizations that chose to join at that point. So it is a provincial nonprofit social benefit organization, and we have 18 member organizations. We have some supporter organizations that don't only serve older people but are still very much in line with what we're all trying to do. And we have a partnership with the Saskatchewan Urban Municipalities Organization, SUMA, the association, in order to pursue some projects, some initiatives that we have common interest in throughout the province. So, the vision is kind of where we're working today. And that vision, it may seem rather large if you think about it. Quality life for all older adults in Saskatchewan. No matter where they are, what their financial effort is, what their health is, we are working towards the best quality life that older adults can have. Ageism is one of the obstacles to creating, to achieving the vision. And ageism is prevalent everywhere. I like this one, a destructive attack on our older selves. Because no matter what our age, if we have ageism embedded in us, we will be attacking ourselves when we get there. It's so prevalent that I think to myself, we accept it. I bet you everybody in this room has unknowingly accepted ageism in our daily lives without even hardly noticing it. because it's so embedded. So I'm going to ask you a question. You don't have to answer it or even use the chat. But the question is, can you think of a time when you realized that somebody was treating you differently because you seemed old? I'll give you one little story. I was flying back from Edmonton. I'd been doing conflict resolution in Edmonton with a group. And I was got on the plane. I had, at that point, WestJet had lovely little tickets that you could, that were less expensive than you thought, not like the most expensive business class idea. But then there was more room in those seats. And I have my own mobility problems. I have one replaced knee and one's arthritic, and they don't bend very well. So that was useful for me. So there I was, and I was seated in the third row, and the little bonus with the tickets was that there was a light meal that got served to the people who had these tickets. And so they came out, and they served, and they didn't get down to row three where I was seated. So I summoned the person, and I explained that I thought that I was part of this. And he said, "Oh, no, no, it's only to row two. You must be mistaken." Well, I always carry the paper version, too, so I showed him the paper version. And it was then that the ageism just, I suddenly became dear and deary. "Oh, my dear. Oh, well, you must have been confused. Were you supposed to sit here?" So you show him the thing. And then, "Well, we need to move you to row two," where nobody was sitting, but nobody was sitting beside me either. And just a great fuss and bother and all kinds of dears and dearies. And I thought, that's often a clue. If you are in the store and you're looking for something and somebody comes along and doesn't just say, "May I help you?" but says, "Oh, my dear, are you looking for something? Because after all, you probably don't have the cognitive ability to find what it is that you're looking for." Those kinds of little comments that just kind of reveal are just one of the signs of ageism. And we can find it in so many ways or notice it. And in some ways, if we notice it, maybe we can in some way let the person know that this might be some action that they could change. The thing about ageism, it does depend on our beliefs. If we believe that old isn't a good place to go, that young is good, old not so much, that's the very foundation. And it also then shows itself, it can lead to a prejudice, it's based on a stereotype that older people, all older people, and when you think about our age span, even if we go from, say, 60 years to 100 plus, that age span has all kinds of abilities and different kinds of people. There's no one thing, no one way that all the people can be seen to be the same. But ageism usually determines that we're losing our cognitive function, probably. We're a little confused. A little bit confused. We just are, and that we don't really do much of anything that's useful. Which, if we think about our province and our towns, that you couldn't get further from the truth if you look at the volunteer organizations and the age of people that are keeping them going. You'll find lots of old people being very, very useful. But it also then leads to its worst form, which is discrimination. That older people might be left out of the decision making. They might be just simply ignored. When I lived in Toronto, Hazel McCallion was the mayor of Mississauga. They called her Hurricane Hazel, and she was. I didn't always agree with her politically, but she was amazing. And so her words here, where she says that Canadians need to confront the reality that every day, its older citizens deal with the most widely tolerated form of prejudice, social prejudice, in the country. the most widely accepted. And the trouble is that when you combine ageism with some of the other unpleasant ageisms that we experience, like sexism, racism, ableism, it compounds the terrible effects that it has. And older people, are their actual physical and mental health can be affected by that ageism. So, SSM constantly works to challenge ageism and to promote well-being on our aging journeys. And they will all be different. And so we use research. We find out what's going on. We are doing a lot of work, a lot of advocacy, and we collaborate. We collaborate with individuals. We collaborate with other groups, because it's only as we join our energies, as we join our synergies together, that we will have a chance to make the most difference, the most likely ability to have some change. So these are just a few of the ones that we do with SSM. We have age-friendly communities. There was age-friendly communities, which is a global movement, had started in all of the other provinces, and Saskatchewan wasn't doing anything, and we said, well, it needs to happen. We'll do it. And it's a movement that encourages communities to consider everything about their community through the eyes of older people, where they might notice gaps, notice things. So, for example, probably all of us in Regina and Saskatoon and neighborhoods recognize how difficult it is this winter, how the winter season, the gaps in care. As I was trying to leap like a gazelle to the button to push to cross the street safely, I was sure glad I had on my good boots with the best non-slip soles, because it wasn't easy. And yes, it affects everybody, but it'll affect older people, and it will affect younger people too, particularly younger people if they use a wheelchair, or younger people with little children in strollers. So we'll see that if one sees the gaps in caring, it affects all ages in a community. And yes, we work on ageism awareness. These next two, we've had a gala for volunteers in Saskatchewan for years called Celebrating Seniors, and there's a big banquet. People can be nominated. Last year, we had it by Zoom. This year, we're hoping we might be able to do it in person again, but we'll have to see how things go. The Century Club is a club that people can request to join if they're 90 years and older. During our times of being careful with one another due to the virus, we haven't held Century Club in person. But this spring, the Lieutenant Governor is going to have teas for the Century Club. In Saskatoon, the Saskatoon Council on Aging does the organizing for the Century Club, and I believe that's going to happen in May. And then I'm going to go on here to the efforts that we have been doing now since 2021. We did research first, did surveys of people within Saskatchewan, and found out what they felt was needed most to help them to continue to age as well as possible. And out of that, we decided to focus on what we call home supports. Home supports, I'll go into a little more detail in a few minutes, is the idea that older people can be supported in a practical way in order to choose to live independently in whatever home they choose. And we have found that that makes for real options, better outcomes, and lower costs. Older adults invariably say conclusively they want to live in their own homes where they choose for as long as possible. Well, governments tell us the same thing. They want older people, they want old adults to live in their own homes. Of course they do. But what is done to help that to happen? If you found as you got older, you were less able to do some of the repairs around a house that you wanted to continue living in, you may go on and keep on trying to do that, but maybe if you had a little help, it would be done more effectively and more safely. We had conversations with, she's one of the owners of the ambulance service out of Nipawin, Jessica Frost. And she told us a story about how often they go out, and what they find is that the accident that happened was because somebody was trying to do something because they thought they needed to do it. They did need to do it, and they didn't feel there was anybody else that could do it. And she's told that story, particularly older men going up on ladders to fix roof or drain pipes and then falling and having accidents. But they said, there is nobody else to do it, so I'm going to do it. So it's time for us to provide the practical and affordable and accessible supports so that people will actually have a real ability to make choices about where they live. So here's some of the detail. These, when you look at the screen, you'll see the kinds of assistance with a program that could include people, include the possibility in communities. If you could have some help with housekeeping, yard care, pet care, renovations. And the key is, of course, you want to be able to know that you could reach a service that you could trust. And you would like some consistency of being the same service. We do have had home care. We still have home care, medical home care in Saskatchewan. But it has diminished to very much urgent home care, medical care, after somebody has come out of a hospital. And it's usually for a very short period of time. But sometimes it might be a lot more helpful if somebody needs a little help checking pills and blood pressures, if there were a healthcare worker who could visit them once in a while and have some diverse needs. In fact, in the old days, in some of the old health regions, these two were combined, that a person was getting a little help with what they needed for medical and maybe showering, that kind of help. But they also had some companionship from the person who came, and maybe that person sat down and ate with them or whipped up the meal or brought some groceries because they knew. They might also have been able to go downstairs and do some laundry. And those things actually happened in the past, but not anymore, really. The thing is, with that kind of choice, and understand me correctly here when I say a home of the choice. It doesn't mean that every older adult wants to live alone in a house. Some people might. Some people might prefer to be living in an apartment or a condo, but they might still need some support. Some people might be able to afford to move to assisted living of a very luxurious form. But if they have some medical or some transportation problems, they still might need a little help. And what 97% of people in Canada say, they want to avoid, if possible, having to move to long-term care, particularly the type of long-term care that is most prevalent in Saskatchewan, which is the hospital style, and not the best for inclusion or decision making by the people who have to make that their home. They need to be in a place where there's 24-hour care, but they become very much eliminated from decision making. Now, there are other examples. Sherbrooke in Saskatoon is another good example of a way that long-term care can be improved. Swiftcurrent has a little area of units that are doing some very good long-term care. But if we could find a way that we didn't have to pressure long-term care, maybe there could be some reform and making it the kind of care that really works for older adults, particularly older adults with forms of dementia that really need some personalized care, and will do very much better then. And back to the rest of us, right now there's about, I believe it's like 8 or 9% of the older adult population that will go to long-term care. And most of us would rather not. With home supports, we would be able to maybe get that down to 3 or 4% that actually had to go to long-term care. And that certainly has shown in examples from other places. And older adults, you think about it, if you can live independently and feel like you're connected in your community, that you can still do your little volunteering if it's a small amount or a large amount, lots of older adults are caregivers, mentors, taxpayers, voters. They're definitely valuable in communities. And those communities are much more vibrant and healthier if they can keep their population. And believe me, the communities in Saskatchewan know they want to keep their population. Those of us in the cities seem like maybe we don't have to worry so much, but I think in order to find the kinds of services and help, we have some of the same problems. And here is a key. So when we hear our health minister and our minister for seniors say, well, we're going to help older adults, we're going to have put in 300 more long-term beds, and we'll find some healthcare workers, that's expensive. And believe me, the older adult population is increasing rapidly. And the segment of the older adult population that's increasing the most is the 80s and 90s and the over 100s. And it's only natural, as we age, we will have more health challenges. It happens. It's part of the aging. But with some support, we can still have a lot more ability to control our life, to feel comfortable, less depression, less isolation, as it actually turns out. In 2021, there was an extensive Queen's University study called Aging Well. And if you can look it up on the internet if you like. And they demonstrated that if you provided quality home supports and people had that, and so they maybe had 20 hours of home support during a week, for example, it would still be way less than going into an institution where the costs at that point were at least $60,000 annually per resident. And those costs, believe me, go up, and also lots more work to find the numbers of people, the numbers of healthcare workers, be to have the jobs in those places and to be there, sufficient staff so that even those institutions can do the job they want. This is a little piece from Australia. In 2021, we had at our annual conference, we had a live from Australia that we managed to do the time difference, and the head of their aged care came and talked to us about how they had worked for the past 13 years figuring out how to do assistance for people in their homes. They called them home support, Commonwealth supports, and they had home care, and you saw home supports were low care needs. But look, 13% of the budget And at that point, almost 840,000 Australians were helped. Up at the top, residential care, and this is not surprising, it's expensive. 64% of the budget serving approximately 190,000 Australians. They did a huge review, and it came out positive all the way along, and so Australia is continuing to work to increase their home supports and their systems for doing that, and they now call them all home supports, and they did have both the high care needs and the low care needs in a system where people can apply. Service providers are vetted, and they can then be served within that program, which is a sliding scale program that if you can afford the services, fine, pay for it. But for those who struggle financially, there would be a sliding scale, and you would not pay as much. And Saskatchewan, the seniors mechanism, we've been working along with representatives from SUMA and SARM and the Minister of for Seniors and the Community Care Branch in the Ministry, and trying to determine if we were to do this, if we could move in that direction, what would be some of the components that a program would have? Where SSM isn't going to design the program and run a program. We're an umbrella advocacy organization, and our small staff, even aided by all the volunteers, that's not none of our purpose at all. But we do think something needs to happen. And we think if it would be a reality, there would need to be some sort of a provincial framework, and that there would be essential services that all through Saskatchewan you could get. But communities might mean the delivery would vary. You would want to ensure that the providers had good qualifications, were consistent, that you could trust them. And potential users might have some sort of an assessment which could help them, particularly those people who said, really, I would like this, but I can't afford what the service providers need to charge. What can we do about that? So, as I say, we've been working away to try and strengthen connections with these people, provincial government, SUMA, SARM. The Saskatchewan Health Quality Council is doing a lot of research, too, about particularly about older adults, and they've been working on one where they're looking at what's the pathway that ends them up in hospital, and are there other ways to avoid hospital and then sit in hospital until you go to long-term care? All of those kinds of ways, we're looking at how we can gather some momentum and continuing evidence. And we're having gatherings of stakeholders. We've had one gathering where we had, for example, Red Cross. We had firefighters represented provincially, chambers of commerce, as well as our own member organizations. And we just continue working down that path. The thing is, there is evidence. At our stakeholders gathering, we had Dr. Dennis Kendall from Saskatoon, past president of the College of Physicians. We had Stephen Lewis, who is a health policy expert now working on Simon Fraser, writes some columns in the Star Phoenix and the Leader Post. And they indicated for 30 years there has been evidence that this is the direction we need to go. But there's a big gap between the evidence and taking action. So how do we manage to navigate that gap? And why is it so difficult for governments to take action, which would save them money and would do good? Well, accepted and embedded ageism. You know, those old people aren't necessarily what we're going to concentrate on. We better concentrate on economy, businesses, young people. That's maybe where we need to spend our efforts. And the big one, too, the election cycle, where political parties always have in mind, what would get me reelected? And an initiative that might take 5 or 6 or 7 years or 8 years to really become effective, well, the election cycle doesn't support that particularly well. Plus, our media and the kind of news that we hear spends so much time on what I call the endless horse race coverage. Who's ahead in the polls now? What did they do? Will they lose in the polls? Will that make people not trust them or wish to support their work? That kind of reporting. So what we're doing? We're trying to gather as much momentum as we can. We'll continue to do that. If you go, you might see ads that we've done and stories in the newspaper. You might see it if you go on social media. Our own Facebook page is there. We are just trying to get as much information as we can. Our SSM website's the easiest way to go, skseniorsmechanism.ca. And we're asking people who think that this kind of work is useful to go on. And if you would like to be included in our list of supporters, we're up, I think, around 1,800 people who have given us their names and say they support this initiative. We do not share the names or the contact information, but we're trying to have enough of a force that we begin to be able to push where we need to push our advocacy. So that's where we're at now. And your location does matter. How you're treated does matter. And I hope that this has been useful for you. Thank you.